Hi, everybody. This is Bill Neville with the Entrust Group. Thanks for joining our monthly webinar, which today we've got Josh Ziegelbaum from Legacy Group, who's going to talk about doing offshore investing, specifically talking about investing in Colombia. So let's go ahead and get started. Josh, want to move on to the next slide. So as we always do, for those who are regular attendees, we put this up, which basically says that Entrust does not endorse or recommend or promote any particular investment. We are doing this webinar purely as an educational webinar to talk about, in this case, some information about if you were considering making investments in Colombia. If you are considering any investment, make sure you talk to an advisor, CPA, lawyers, anybody who is someone in your life that you ask for that kind of information, get that kind of advice, but it won't be Entrust that gives you advice. So what we're going to do is first is an introduction, myself and then Legacy Group, and then Josh is going to take over and go over Colombian, the investment landscape in Colombia, go over what are some of the opportunities and the risks of investing in Colombia, and then show a case study of one of the investments that they've done called Green Coffee Company. And then at the end, we'll do a Q&A. So if you do have any questions, you can go ahead and enter those in at any time. In the questions box, in the chat box of your app. And then we'll answer all the questions at the end. So whether you have questions specifically for Josh about what he's going to be talking about or generally about self-directed IRAs, you can type them in at any time. So that's me. I'm business development manager with the Entrust Group, and, we need to update this slide. I'm actually coming up in a couple of weeks. It'll be 12 years that I'll have been with Entrust. And what I do is I educate investors about using self-directed IRAs for investing in real estate. And I graduated from Penn State University. As far as assets, Entrust is concerned, we've been in business since 1981, so well over 40 years. We have approximately $4 billion in assets that we currently custody. In our time, we've had about 45,000 different investors that have had accounts with us and use them to invest. And how we differentiate ourselves, one of the ways that we differentiate ourselves from our competitors is we provide all of our account holders a single point of contact. So I'm one of four business development managers. I'm a regional business development manager in the Northwest region. And then I have a colleague and covers the Southwest, another one in the Northeast, and another in the Southeast. And again, through that business model, we provide a single point of contact. So for anybody who opens an account, either referred by one of my referral partners or is in my region, then I would be your point of contact. What we do, we are administrators, custodian, and record keeper of what are called self-directed retirement accounts. Basically what that means is that if you want to invest in non-traditional assets, anything outside of the stock bond mutual fund market, you want to have your account with a self-directed custodian, which is what Entrust does. The majority of our company has a certified IRA service professional designation. We have offices throughout the United States. We're headquartered out of Oakland, California, and we do many in-person events and virtual webinars, which you can keep an eye on those events. We post them on our website, and obviously we have the monthly webinar. We have a national continuing education program for realtors. We have one for certified investment CIAs. We have one for also for CPAs. So if anybody is interested in generating CE credits, and wants to set up one of those meetings, just let us know. And then we have our biannual IRA Academy. And what that is we have someone in our company who trains essentially our competitors on what they need to do and information they need to press the CI, Certified IRA Service Professional designation. We're the only company in our space that does that, which leads to our, what we advertise ourselves as the leading educator in our industry. We think that supports that. As I mentioned, a self-directed IRA is simply an a retirement account in which the investor makes all the investment decisions and you can invest in non-traditional investments. So when you have an account with a bank or brokerage firm and you want to invest in real estate or private equity or private debt or precious metals, typically those companies are not willing to do that. It's not that they aren't allowed to legally, it's their business model. They choose not to. And so you need to open an account with a self-directed custodian, like Entrust, in order to make those types of investments. But we don't provide any advisory services. We're not a fiduciary. We don't do any due diligence on any investment you want to make. That's up to you. That's part of the self-directed part of it. But we are regulated by all the same agencies that you would get from a Fidelity, Charles Schwab, Merrill Lynch, companies like that. We are subject to the same regulations. The only difference is, again, we don't provide the advisory services. However, we will hold non-traditional investments, things outside of the traditional stock, bond, mutual fund market. So at this point, I'm gonna pass everything over. I'm gonna put myself on mute and pass everything over to Josh. So, just as a quick background, how I got to be connected with Josh is we had somebody who invested in one of their offerings with the Green Coffee Company that invests in Colombia through their Entrust IRA, and I got to talking with Josh about what it is that they do, and kind of, you know, came to the conclusion that what they know and what they do and their knowledge could be something that you guys might be interested in, brings a particular expertise that, excuse me, not a lot of people have. And so we worked out to have him come on and be a subject matter expert to educate you guys on kind of a unique niche, which would be specifically how to invest in Colombia. So I'm going to put myself on mute. I'm going to let Josh take it over from here again. Go ahead and type in your questions as they come up, as they go along, or wait until the end, and then we'll answer all your questions at the end. Josh, you got the con.
Bill, thanks for that great introduction and for the background on Entrust. And I, as you mentioned, I've had some great experience working with you guys recently, first with our initial investor, and now I know we've become a good source of investors for the group, and our investors have had only good things to say about Entrust and their experience. So in any event, I'm very happy to be here today and talk to you guys about what we do at Legacy Group and through our portfolio company investments. The name and the logo you see on screen is Green Coffee Company. It's Colombia's number one largest coffee producer and the project I spend the most of, if not all my time on here at Legacy Group. So today we're going to get familiar with foreign investments. In terms of the investment structure through Green Coffee Company, it is U.S.-based, but the exposure is overseas to Colombia. We have substantial land holdings over there, but before we dive into what we're doing at Green Coffee Company and what makes that special, I'm going to give a background on myself, and then we're going to talk about the Colombian investment landscape, specifically the alternative investment landscape. So my name is Josh Ziegelbaum, Director of Investor Relations at Legacy Group. We're a private equity asset manager focusing on unique investment opportunities that produce high social and environmental impact, specifically in Latin America. And the market that we're in heavily today would be Colombia. The two partners at my firm, they live and work out of Medellin. So we have on-the-ground experience. We've been there for almost a decade. And we're applying first-world business tactics to the country of Colombia and really innovating and changing industries. It's something really exciting to be a part of. I've been involved in through Legacy Group and its portfolio companies for 3 years. We have over 400 investors to date, over 50 million committed to Green Coffee Company, which is the project that I mentioned. And our investors are very excited about the investment landscape over there and in that of Latin America. We're very bullish on the region. I'm going to tell you some of the reasons why. And we're also going to talk about some risk factors relevant in the region. So we believe that Colombia's alternative investment landscape is ripe with opportunities. The points here that you see on this slide, we're going to dive to individually on the forthcoming slides, but they're high upside with low initial investments, favorable economic characteristics, large trading activity with the U.S., history of democracy, gaps in the business ecosystem, its large consumer market, which is growing, the means by which investors diversify, and then what are the risks? So at the end of these points, I'm going to dive into some of the risks that we see on the ground and what our investors ask about and what you as investors should think about if you're deploying capital into the region, whether it's through us and Green Coffee Company or our other projects or on your own or through other asset managers. So first and foremost, on the positive end, would be high upside with low initial investments. So the foreign exchange rate in Colombia for U.S.-based investors is the highest it's ever been, less than 50% of what the same transactions would have cost if done in 2012. I'm going to show you a chart on the next slide here of the Colombian peso versus the dollar, and it's just been devalued heavily over recent years, which leads to investment amounts entering the market being lower on a dollar per Colombian peso basis. So all else equal, investment coming into the market today is able to buy more assets, more land holdings, control more resources than it was even as recent as 6 to 12 months ago. So Colombian businesses are proving to have high growth potential, and this differential in the foreign exchange rate has made it attractive, we believe, at Legacy Group, for investment to be deployed into the region. This chart here shows the Colombian peso exchange rate against the dollar. You can see just the dramatic rise over the last 10 years from sub 2,000 to 1 to almost, it crossed over 5,000 to 1, but now hovering just under it. So like I said, all else equal, dollars going into the country are able to go farther. They're able to buy more land holdings if you're in real estate, in the case of us, more assets. And it's something that we're seeing that investors should be paying attention to when they're looking to make investments into the region. Something interesting as well, I mean, what goes up, as we know, being investment professionals, typically goes down. We never know when, right? But for someone that's buying assets at this exchange rate where we're at today, just around 5,000 to 1, if it even just kind of trades back towards its historical average, let's call it 3,500 in this case, 4,000, you know, investors could capture upside on exchange rate differentials alone just in having that go back to historical averages. And this is something applicable in all industries, not just what we're doing, and not even just in Colombia, but something to consider if you're looking at emerging markets or if you're looking at Latin America in the case of this conversation. But even if you're looking at other markets, it's really important to look at the exchange rate and understand, okay, where is this coming from? Where did it go? And where do I expect things to go? We can't know with certainty, but seeing this dramatic rise of the dollar versus the peso, you know, logic says that it should go back to more historical norms and averages, kind of all else equal. That remains to be seen if that happens. But this is something interesting to keep your eye on as an investor targeting other markets with U.S. dollars. So back to Colombia specifically. So Colombia as a country has a very long history of democratic institutions. It's number one in Latin America for corporate governance, number two in business dynamism and financial system stability. It's actually the longest running democracy in South America. And this establishes goodwill in the foreign direct investment market. One of my colleagues was doing some research for a paper that we're doing, and we've noticed that foreign direct investment has risen quite drastically over recent years. A lot of that being in the last 4 years. So there's a heavy influx of investment capital going into the market from investors, not just ourselves, but across the board. So the U.S. is Colombia's largest trading partner. We expect that'll grow over time. There's opportunity to revamp the global supply chain. We think that a lot of the negative things that are happening in Asia right now are really shifting focus to what we call nearshoring, and investment in markets that are more closer to home, that are less exposed to the tensions overseas that we're seeing in Asia right now. So there's really some opportunity there in the supply chain. As supply chains evolve, we believe Colombia will stand to benefit significantly. We've seen that happen since the COVID pandemic, and we expect that that'll continue. The pandemic really increased the chances of this becoming a reality. The tensions we're seeing overseas with our usual trading partners have risen. And we think that Latin America as a region, and specifically Colombia here, stand to benefit from that. So there's really gaps in the business ecosystem down in Colombia that investors need to be aware of. There's inefficient industries. We see that in agriculture, for example, at Green Coffee Company, a lot of the practices of farm landholders that we're buying farms from, they use very antiquated farming practices. So things are highly inefficient, but that leads to opportunities that could be exploited by investors if they act intelligently. So we're integrating real-world human capital and world-class technology through our portfolio companies to exploit these gaps. Investors should really pay attention to arbitrage opportunities, things like not just the exchange rate, but when it comes to labor and technology. There's less competition in the market there in Latin America, specifically Colombia, and the rewards are higher to those who are able to deliver value. Colombia itself has a large domestic consumer market, population just over 50 million, domestic wealth increasing, spending having reached an all-time high last year in Q3 of 2022 on a consumer level. Having a wealthier population truly adds value for foreign direct investments into the region. So from an investment standpoint, like, why would someone want to consider Colombia or Latin America in general, right? We notice in our conversations with high net worth investors that they're heavily allocated towards US-based assets, whether that be the homes that they own, the investment properties that they own, the stocks and bonds that make up their portfolio, whether that be their individual portfolio or their retirement accounts. The cash that they hold is in US dollars. The high net worth investors that we talk to are heavily allocated in US assets. So it's important for them to consider diversification, not just across asset classes, but across geographies. The current structural, political, and monetary issues in the US right now are making it more attractive for investors to consider placing money overseas than they did before. I know on a personal level, let's call it pre-COVID, I was very comfortable with my portfolio being only allocated in the U.S. I had a very small amount of emerging markets exposure through my 401k, my previous job. But outside of that, I was almost all U.S.-based. It really took kind of what I see as some deterioration here on a government level in the U.S. and on a monetary policy level. You know, we're all, you know, no one could really turn the corner without seeing the instability that is in front of us and that has been in front of us in recent years. And that's not just specific to the U.S. It's on a global basis. But seeing that and having it come to light for us with the advent of inflation and instability here has led me and others to look at markets outside of the U.S., really consider those to be an important portion of our portfolio that isn't necessarily there. So a lack of investable assets in developed markets, so-called developed markets, such as the U.S. and parts of developed Europe, with potential returns in excess of inflation is low. So investors are having a hard time finding opportunities that can yield more than 6 to 8%. And with the inflation reading recently being 6%, obviously it's cooling. It's hard to find investments that exceed that, especially in the developed markets. So looking into emerging markets can provide that opportunity for investors. We believe that Colombia provides stability and upside potential for investors that are looking for exposure into Latin America. So what are the potential risks in the region? What should investors think about? Some of the things here are what I think about and what our investors think about at Legacy Group and through our portfolio companies. So speaking specifically to Green Coffee Company, maybe if you were doing another agricultural endeavor, weather patterns are definitely something to consider. So adverse weather patterns could have an effect on production in any given year. So as an owner of agricultural assets in any given year, if there's excess rain or not enough rain, that could throw off production expectations, that can throw a wrench in your pro forma and really change the way in which your investment could perform. So in agriculture, and this isn't necessarily specific to Colombia or Latin America, but adverse weather patterns related to your investments is something to consider as a potential risk and one that we've seen affect our production of our portfolio companies. Macroeconomic conditions is another one. Obviously, inflation, fear in the market, expectations of higher rates to come, you know, this has caused some deterioration in public markets. We're seeing deterioration in real estate, both residential and commercial here in the U.S. And macroeconomic conditions affect other countries in different ways, but the same ways in which we're being affected here, those are things that can move the market in other locations, such as Colombia or Latin America, or pick your market. So global macroeconomic conditions, maybe even microeconomic conditions in the specific region that you're in and the specific city or specific industry, those are all things to consider as potential risks investing into the region. If you're investing in earlier stage companies that are looking to exit, whether that's through a sale or an IPO, market appetite is one that's a potential risk. You know, as we build out our pro forma and our expectations for where we want to take Green Coffee Company, as an example, we're planning to either sell or IPO this company in 2026. Now, a potential risk in this example would be, what are market conditions at that point when you're looking to do an exit? You know, I'm just plugging in Green Coffee Company as an example, but for any early stage company that you're investing in, whether that's in the U.S. or in this case in Latin America, market appetite for those exits is something to consider. And if you're investing in Latin America or in Colombia, you need to think, well, what will the appetite be, not just for a company that does this, but a company that does this in Colombia or a company that does this in Latin America? So this is an important potential risk to keep your eyes on as an investor in the region. Another would be regulation and political landscape. So, you know, it's no secret that regulation has been increasing in certain states and certain countries. You know, we're seeing that in parts of the U.S. We also see it in parts of Latin America. So as new administrations come in, regulation could be changed dramatically, whether that's an increase in taxes, change in labor regimes. These are all things that investors need to look at as a potential risk to their capital as they're placing monies in the market. Couple additional risks continued here. It's dependence on key personnel. If you're investing in another country, you're not as close to your key personnel. So it's important to be on the ground there in order to evaluate that, or have someone on the ground who can keep track of the key personnel and keep them in check and make sure that they do what needs to be done to drive the business forward. So that's definitely a risk when you're considering investing in another market. We see this with real estate investors in the U.S. who invest out of state. I'd say similar things apply when it goes to like investing in businesses in other countries. If you're not there, you need to have someone there who you know and trust is capable of taking care of things as if it were their own. Another would be hedging arrangements. You know, that exchange rate differential being favorable right now, that could also go against you as an investor. So it's something to consider. If you have heavy exposure to the foreign exchange markets, hedging your positions is important, and needing to have those arrangements in order is something that investors should absolutely consider. So industry-specific risks, those would be like industry-specific. So agriculture was one where we talked about weather. Maybe technology, it would be access to human talent that's capable of delivering what needs to be done. So it's important to know, like, the local labor market in the market you're investing in. Does it support your business initiatives? Are there any industry-specific risks to consider for your investment? That's something that investors should be thinking about. Then, of course, the ability to meet your financial projections. And this really applies to any investment. How sound is the business plan? Does management have the ability to meet its projections? Do all the risk factors that we talked about here lead me to believe as an investor that my projections will be met? That's why when you underwrite your projections, or when you you're considering an investment and you're asking someone about their projections, how conservative are they? What's the downside risk for an investment? So an ability to meet projections is certainly a potential risk for investing into Latin America and into Colombia. So now we're going to pivot over to Green Coffee Company. I'm going to give a real life example of what we do at Legacy Group, talk to you a bit about the business of Green Coffee Company, how it started, what our goals are as we drive it forward for our investor base. This is a really good use case example for you, I believe, to support the previous slides of the presentation. So summary of the investment. So this is our fourth formal funding round for Green Coffee Company. It's Colombia's number one largest coffee producer. Even though the assets are based in Colombia, like the farmland, the processing facilities, the investment structure itself is U.S.-based. You may find this with other investment opportunities geared towards Latin America as well. But just as an example of what we do, we allow investors to participate through a U.S. holding company structure and gain access to the market there. It doesn't mean that the same factors don't apply to the company like we talked about previously, but from a structural standpoint, that's how we have things done. That U.S. holding company owns 100% of all the Colombian assets and all the operating subsidiaries there. So what we're doing now, we're in our Series C funding round. We're issuing $25 million of common equity. We have a $100,000 minimum investment. This is for accredited investors only. And the goal of this funding round is to focus on achieving a dominant market position in Colombia, expanding the global market for our coffee with increased roasted coffee channels, and growing our newest channel, the sale of vodka and spirits from the waste of coffee production. So this equity raise is being done concurrently with a $75 million debt financing round. So total use of proceeds would be $100 million from the Series C funding. Current valuation is just under $100 million. That's going into this round. And base share price is $1,200 a share. So we divided it into three equal tranches for the raise. We're in the final third of the round. We're actually just under $4 million remaining in the Series C. But we opened this in September, and we've been moving forward quite strongly, I would say. And kind of moving on to the next slide. So where are we going to use this growth capital? How's it going to be deployed into the company? What are we doing specifically in and out of Colombia with this fresh investor capital from the Series C round? You can see just over half of the total proceeds, about $57 million, is used for farm acquisition payments and additional infrastructure build out. So that would be new wet mills, new dry mill, replicating what we've already done. So we have a goal of growing from just 7,000 acres today to 15,000 by year end 2023 and continuing to dominate the market. Our business model is wholesale B2B containers of green coffee. So that's coffee that's been taken down and processed to be an unroasted coffee bean, but not yet roasted. So part of our business plan is to expand vertically into the United States, build a U.S.-based roaster. So $15 million of the $100 million Series C round is earmarked towards that. And then we're using about $6.5 million for an alcohol distillation facility. So on site at our wet mills in Colombia, we're building an alcohol distillation facility to monetize the waste of coffee production. We expect to produce over 38,000 bottles of vodka per day at full capacity from our one distillery with a product that is essentially trash and non-revenue producing. This is a really exciting initiative for the business that our investors really like, and it's new to the Series C round. And the balance here would be working capital. So that's retiring existing debt, funding our trading operations, and for general corporate purposes, total of the capital raise, $100 million. So what's our story? How did we become Colombia's number one largest coffee producer in just 5 years' time? In 2017, we seized the moment to create the business, a company that we knew would be able to challenge the traditional way that coffee was produced in the region. It's really just been plagued by generations of underinvestment, particularly foreign investment, and a lot of decentralization. I alluded to in the beginning the fragmented nature of the land holdings there. It's really, really antiquated practices with older equipment and methods, and we're changing that. We knew that it was ripe for innovation and a fresh perspective. We've been executing on that thesis from back in 2017, and now our ambitions are growing. So in less than 5 years, we became Colombia's largest producer. Some stats here on this slide, some of which are I can give you some more current stats here. So land holdings at the time of the launch of the Series C round were 27 farms, 6,600 acres. We had 7.7 million coffee trees, just over 400 full-time workers. Investor count now, as of today, is over 400. And we have over $53 million invested to date in the company. There are several environmental certifications. It's Rainforest Alliance certified, Cafe Practices certification, That means it could be sold to the likes of Starbucks as an end client. We're also a member of CEA Colombia, which is the Council for American Enterprises doing business in the country. It gives us access to information from the embassy and kind of key movement happening in the region. Last year, we received an award from Colombian Congress and Colombia's agricultural minister for best technological innovation in agriculture. So we're truly leading the coffee industry in several metrics, full-time employment, single mother greenhouse initiatives, which we'll tie into later, things on the circular economy, so that's using everything that we grow to drive revenue, such as the byproduct initiative, and then really increasing our revenue and support for local farmers by purchasing their coffee at or above market, in addition to processing our own production. So we're becoming a go-to buyer for coffee cherries from other farmers, as well as producing our own. The management team definitely makes this special. I'm going to talk on some of the key team members here that stand out to me. So let's start with the top line. Boris Woolner, board member and GCC president. Boris has done a great job driving forward innovation. He has 25 years of combined experience in Colombian agriculture, really great working relationships with coffee distributors, government officials, and logistics providers. And we're very pleased to have Boris on the team, and really we've seen substantial growth in the company since he joined. Cole Shepherd and Adam Jason are the other two board members. It's a three-person board. They're also partners at Legacy Group. So Cole is the founding partner and founder of GCC. Prior to moving to Colombia and founding the company, he worked for PwC doing corporate mergers and acquisitions, advising on large transactions globally. Adam Jason, full career as a corporate lawyer, also a Legacy Group partner and GCC board member. He was representing companies with public and private debt and equity issuances in the U.S. during his career. Both are U.S. trained and educated and U.S. born, and both live in Medellin, Colombia, where we manage the day-to-day of our portfolio company investments on behalf of our 400-plus investors. Leonardo Sanchez, our CFO, prior to joining us, he was working with Fox Latin America. And then I'm just going to touch on the strategic advisors we have at the bottom right. So Chris Kelly is a partner with Jones Day, joined us a little over a year ago. He's one of the world's largest and most recognized law firms, Jones Day, where he works. And Chris has been repeatedly named America's leading lawyer for business by Chambers USA and will really help us drive forward the exit strategy for our investors. Steve Oakland is a strategic advisor that joined us last year. Steve is the president and CEO and board member of Treehouse Foods, a publicly traded company in the U.S. He oversees over $4 billion a year in food service revenue. And prior to doing that, he was president of coffee and food service at Jam Smucker Company for several years, overseeing Dunkin's brands, Folgers. So Steve is an incredible addition to the team, really driving forward relationships for us on the roasted coffee side. And we're incredibly excited to having had him join us at the end of 2022. So I'm going to touch on some of the key pillars of the business and what we want to execute on in our Series C round. So pillar one is what we do best now, which is coffee farming, production, and green coffee sales. This slide gives you an illustration of the process. So we plant the coffee seedlings in our own nurseries. That's headed up by a group of women who are heads of households in leadership positions. After the trees are ready, they're then planted on our farms until they're monitored and matured. Once the coffee cherry matures, it's harvested. Everything is hand-picked and then brought directly to our world-class processing facility. You can see it's taken down from cherry form into green bean form, and then we go through rigorous quality control, and then the coffee is delivered to our global clients. This map here gives you kind of an idea of how we've grown through acquisitions over the years. So in 2018, we did our seed funding round. We did our first farmland acquisitions, which is the small green area shaded on the map, just over 600 acres. And we've grown today to just about 7,000. So you could see these various acquisitions we've done over recent years, growing the land holdings to where they are today. This is all centered around the town of Salgar, which is about 2 to 3 hours outside of Medellin by car. We're the largest employer in the town. And we have planned farmland purchases through year end this year that'll bring us up to an expected acre count of about 15,000. The second pillar we're focusing on behalf of our investors would be large-scale roasted coffee sales. This is what I talked about with the vertical integration into the U.S.-based roaster. The reason for doing so is that we can make more margin per pound by going the roasted channel. So our all-in cost for green coffee or unroasted is just under $2 and sold for just over $2 a pound. Margin is about 30%. But for roasted coffee, we could sell it substantially higher. It becomes more of a consumer product as opposed to a commodity, and the margins are close to 50%. So the benefits of selling roasted coffee would be higher end pricing for a Colombian production, U.S.-based operations for more attractive financing, and a culmination of the farm-to-consumer value add that we could provide. Some stats on our U.S.-based roaster and the capacity that we're anticipating. So we expect to do over 30 million pounds of coffee per year, roasted coffee per year from our facility. We're targeting Florida and Texas, but as of today, we're more heavily focused on Texas, Houston being our target market. We expect our first roasting facility to open there in 2024. The cost of this is just a capital cost of $15 million. And projected revenue from the roasted coffee vertical is north of $200 million going into our projected exit year in 2026. So the final pillar, pillar three, would be the untapped potential of the coffee cherry. 80% of the coffee cherry is considered waste, and only 20% of it is the coffee bean that we know and drink. Historically, that waste has been discarded. However, it's very high in sugars, it has nutritious characteristics, and it's available at no cost to us. Actually, 100,000 kilograms of this waste is produced per day at just one of our wet mills. So it's a tremendous amount of waste. So monetizing this untapped revenue source is very important to us, one of the key pillars of our business. The coffee cherries begin to ferment within just a day, so it's important to capture them immediately. So we're building a distillery facility on-site at our wet mills in Colombia to process the cherry waste on-site. We're first focusing on spirit production, and then we're going to be looking at other products that we can use as well and create from the waste of coffee production. Some stats here, a few of which I talked about on the previous slide. Capacity, 38,000 bottles of vodka per day once launched. Projected to produce just about $50 million in top-line revenue going into 2026. Capital costs only $6.4 million. And we expect that our distillery to be completed here in 2023. We already launched the test distillery in February, and we have some videos on that, which we've been releasing to our investors and those that follow our newsletter. It's a really exciting initiative and one that I see taking shape. I recently went down to Medellin within the last couple of months. I saw our test distillery there, and the team was very excited, and as am I and as are our investors for this third pillar of our business plan. So something we didn't talk too much about would be the social and environmental impact. So we truly drive value by doing things right. Everything we do at Legacy Group and at Green Coffee Company is focused on impact. So over the past decade, we've seen the global economy really begin to focus on this, not just a small amount of investors, but on a wider level. So from both a doing things right perspective, a value creation expectancy, but also with the idea of getting the most value as possible as we look to exit the business, doing things right is very important. So every initiative that we do gains value. Everything that we do is efficient, whether it comes to waste or running the farms. And having a positive image in the market is incredibly important to us. So our actions help improve the social standing of the company locally, nationally, and internationally, which provides a lot of value. And sustainability sells. Our clients, particularly the specialty coffee clients, they demand single origin, sustainable coffee, and they're willing to pay a premium for it. So we're going to move forward here beyond this slide, but you'll find my contact information here. If you want to get in touch after the presentation, feel free to reach out to me. My email address, investor.relations@legacy-group.co, and you can reach me on my cell, 609-610-8288. And thanks for your time. And I'm going to turn it over to Bill, and I think we're going to transition to some questions shortly.
Okay. Thanks, Josh. I want to go ahead to the next slide. So just FYI, our next our next webinar is going to be learn how IRAs can help you keep more savings. That's going to be coming up. I think we usually have it on the third Wednesday, third Thursday. I don't know what exactly when it is, but it'll be next month. Look, keep an eye out for it.
Sorry for this typo, Bill, right here. You were right about the last one.
Okay. If you, you know, have any, we're going to have a survey at the end, so let us know how this went. You can go to our website for more information and also follow us on social media if you want to keep up with us. Go ahead, next one, Josh. So now we're going to take questions. There's a few that have already been typed in, so I'm going to start going through those. Feel free to add any more questions, and Josh and I will cover them at this point. Go ahead and put it on the next screen there, Josh, just keep our contact info. So if you guys have questions that you want to take offline for either myself or Josh, there's our information. So I'm just going to go ahead and go into these, and then Josh and I will answer as necessary. The first question is, do you believe the stock market is going to crash in July? I'm not sure if that's referring to the United States or if they're referring to Colombia. I'll say from my standpoint, and to be clear, I don't have any special knowledge, right? Like I'm not an advisor. I'm not a stockbroker. Like I don't work in that industry. And honestly, I don't really pay much attention to the stock market because I'm not really invested in it. I have Entrust accounts. I'm holding non-traditional assets. So my answer to that question is I don't really know. I don't really pay much attention to it. I don't know what's going on. That specifically would be July. That would be the question. Josh, is there anything with Colombia that, you know, that you would have any special knowledge about that might, and just in case she's asking about Colombia and not the United States?
Well, thanks, Bill. I'm not aware of anything specifically coming in July. I don't have, like you said, I don't have a crystal ball either. If we did, then we might not be here. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to time the stock market. So if a crash is coming, a crash is definitely coming at some point, as we've seen recently, but the stock market rebounds, right? But when it's coming, I think it's very, very difficult and challenging to pinpoint that as an investor. So I'm not aware of anything specifically in the U.S. or Colombia in July, but there is fear in the market now. I mean, we've seen a bit of a rebound and now a sell-off again in the stock market, and it's a lot of heightened uncertainty with everything the Fed's doing and things that are happening on a global basis. But I don't, short answer is I don't believe it's going to crash in July, but I don't have reason to believe it's not going to either.
So. Well, and again, I mean, from an interest standpoint, we're holding typically non-traditional assets. So like we don't really have accounts that invest in the stock market with us. Like people are investing in real estate, precious metals, private equity, you know, things like that with us. So honestly, I don't really pay a lot of attention to it. All right, so the next question, which is for me, I have an existing Entrust self-directed IRA. Thank you for your business. I'm interested in holding the IRA in an offshore LLC through which I can make and hold foreign investments. Can Entrust continue to serve as custodian given this particular structure? Thanks. The answer to that is yes. Now, depending upon the country in which you want to invest, you might be using the term LLC as a general term. The entity that you have to establish in that country might be something other than an LLC, like the entity is that you're going to want to, depending upon the country in which you want to invest, you're going to want to make sure that you want to do your due diligence to find out what kind of entity you're allowed to set up to invest in that country. Can it be an LLC that's established in the United States? Will have to be some kind of entity in that country. It's looking like based on, you know, Josh's presentation that an LLC that's set up and established in with its nexus in the United States can still invest in Colombia. That might not be the case in any other country that you want to invest in. So my suggestion that there is just to, you know, do your due diligence and make sure. But I mean, the answer to your question is yes, we can. If you want to set up some kind of entity that's going to invest, you know, your IRA is going to fund an entity that's going to invest in another country. Yeah, we have a number of account holders that do that. All right. So, Josh, I've got several different questions that I'm sort of going to combine them all. That's all based around the current government in the Colombia and your opinion on how that's going to, I guess, affect investing there, or, you know, how it's going to affect things in Colombia. And, you know, that's if you have any like opinion on that. But I'm going to sort of read the different questions and how they're phrased. And then I think they all fall sort of into like can fall under one answer. But, you know, the one first question is, how do you assess the risk with the current president government? Again, I'm pretty sure they're talking about Colombia there. Talks about the open border policy of the current administration is generating a lot of Venezuelans that are moving to Colombia. And does the government in Colombia have any plans to address the Venezuelans moving there? Let me think. I thought there was another one that said, you know, basically, you know, what's the impact of the current government have on things there? So, you know, I'm going to just like make that a general thing and around this question around like the current president, the current government there and how that's affecting things in Colombia. You know, you can answer the question that way.
Sure. Thanks, Bill. This is a question that almost all of our investors ask, and rightfully so, and something that we pay attention to very closely at Legacy Group, having been there for almost 10 years now and having these government administrations, of course, affecting our business and whatnot. So let me tell you our opinion and what we're seeing on the ground as it relates to the new government and the new president that came into office recently. So on the campaign trail, Gustavo Petro spoke to making Colombia more of a producer and less of an importer, really focusing on lifting up the economy and not so much doing imports, but making real products and sustainable products. So there was talk before and after he came into office on coming down on oil and gas and on illicit industries and really trying to lift up the core of the economy. With coffee being the national product, we believe that a lot of resources will go towards it in the years to come as reforms happen. Everything that's been said before and after he came into office has been positive for the coffee industry. So we've been in on a lot of those meetings where, you know, we have close government relationships, not necessarily with the president, but the governor of Antioquia, the department where we operate, or state, it's the equivalent of a state here in the U.S., he prepared an opening address for us at one of our inauguration events, at one of our processing facilities. We had members of Congress there, important people in government. Like I mentioned during the presentation, we got an award from the Colombian Congress for best innovation in agriculture. So while the landscape is certainly changing and you can argue that certain things are less business friendly, from our standpoint, you know, we believe that agriculture stands to benefit greatly and has benefited from the business plan itself of what we're doing at Green Coffee Company and how this all plays into effect. I talked about the exchange rate leading like the deterioration of the peso versus the dollar leading to investment opportunities. We saw some of that move extend once Petro came into office. So as that happens, we're able to buy more farmland and more assets, all else equal, with the investment capital that's coming in. But what's unique about the space that we operate in is that coffee itself is a commodity that's sold globally in dollars. So even while there's kind of changes in the Colombian peso exchange rate, we have money coming in that's buying more assets, and then we're turning around and we're selling it in dollar-denominated markets. So any kind of large moves from here don't drastically affect, like, profitability and revenues because that's in U.S. dollars. It's a bit of a unique niche that we're playing in there. But everything we're seeing, you know, it points to support for agriculture, kind of coming down on oil and gas, like I said. You know, we see that this is as a positive. It's something that we're navigating. We're paying very close attention to it. And business has moved on. You know, it's almost business as usual for us. You're right that there's some fear in the market, and that's led to some additional buying opportunities from us, from sellers who are willing to let go of their land holdings. But that's kind of what we're seeing, and we're very bullish on the country and on where things are going. But that being said, we're keeping our eyes on the administration and things that are being done, and we're acting accordingly.
I'm going to just, like, one of the good questions, and it was very specific, and you might not have any have any special knowledge or input on this, but one of them was specifically around, and I guess the immigration into Colombia, specifically from Venezuela, says, does the government have any plans to address the Venezuelans moving in? That's a very specific question. I don't know if you have any knowledge or input onto that, but just wanted to see if you had, you know, if you've heard anything based on your relationships around that specific issue.
I don't have a comment on that specific issue, Bill. So okay. I couldn't really shed light on it.
Okay. So next question, this is geared towards me. Understood that Entrust is a custodian, not an advisor or fiduciary, but do you provide tax strategy and guidance on what types of investments are permissible via self-directed IRA? So tax strategy, absolutely not. We don't provide tax strategy. Guidance on what types of investments are permissible via self-directed IRA? Yes, absolutely. We can, you know, provide input on that. And so there's only three asset types that you're not allowed to invest in inside a retirement account. There's collectibles. So like art, alcoholic beverages, I guess stamps, like anything that's considered a collectible, is not allowed. Art being one of those sort of more popular ones that people consider investing or want to invest in potentially, or like I said, alcoholic beverages. Those are not allowed. Those are considered collectibles. So collectibles, life insurance, and S corporations. That's the letter S. So you can invest in pretty much any corporate structure. You can invest in LLCs, limited partnerships, C corps. You're not allowed to invest your IRA into an S corporation. So those are the only asset classes you're not allowed to invest in. Now, there are what's called prohibited transactions, where an IRA can't do business with what's considered a disqualified person, or you can't engage in self-dealing. So a disqualified person would be the account holder's spouse, the account holder's ancestors, so parents, grandparents, et cetera, and the account holder's lineal descendants, so children, grandchildren, et cetera, et cetera. So, for example, if you wanted to invest in real estate, you wanted to buy a property, your IRA can't buy a property that's already owned by a disqualified person. So if you, let's say your parents own a property, you want your IRA to buy it, that's a prohibited transaction. We could not process that. So if you submitted the paperwork to us to have your IRA buy a property from your parents, then we would reject it. We wouldn't be able to we can't knowingly process a prohibited transaction. So when you ask the question, guidance on what types of investments are permissible via self-directed IRA. I mean, I certainly have conversations on a fairly regular basis where somebody says, look, here's the investment that I'm considering. You know, can I do this? And if I can provide a black and white yes or no answer, like that example, I want to buy my parents' property using my IRA. My answer would be no. That's a prohibited transaction. But there can sometimes be that section of the code has a lot of ambiguity and gray area, particularly when people are maybe a part owner in a company, or if you are a general partner in a fund and you want to use your IRA to invest back into that. Now you're getting into an area that becomes a lot more gray. So I guess it's a long answer to a short question, which is yes, we won't provide tax strategy. Can we provide guidance on what types of permissives are permissible? Yes, we can provide some guidance, but ultimately the decision and the risk is yours, whether something is considered prohibited or not. And you can fall into some areas, depending upon the type of transaction that you want to do, that might fall into a gray area where we could end up processing the transaction because it's not obviously prohibited to us, but the IRS or the Department of Labor might view it differently. So. You know, as always, we encourage people to, before making any investment, talk to advisors and CPAs, right? Because if you have something that you might think fall in the realm of being prohibited, or a tax advisor, a CPA like that would also be able to read that section of the code and provide their input as well. Okay. Let me, skip down because we've covered some of these questions. Okay. Josh, this one would be for you. There's talk/risk of agricultural reform. Land redistribution that affects farms cannot be bigger than 80 hectares. So that's more of a comment, but I mean, it sounds like they want your, you know, input on that.
Sure. We have individual. So while we are the largest single consolidated producer with the land holdings I mentioned and the 27 farms, those 27 farms aren't just 27 titles. They're made up of a series of titles. So in the event that one particular farm or parcel could not be more than a stated amount of hectares, you know, we would have to parcel up the larger land holdings, but essentially we're holding a series of smaller parcels already on the balance sheet.
Okay. Sorry, I was reading down through the questions. I lost my place. All right, here we go. Josh, what is your outlook on Colombia's real estate market?
I'm bullish on it, especially with, you know, we're seeing a very strong demand. I could speak specifically to Medellin, which is where I spend my time when I go. A lot of tourist activity, high interest from people from the U.S. and other parts of the world who want to travel there. And I'm very bullish on the real estate market, particularly with the peso close to 5,000 to one. I think, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, like I said, but if I was looking at emerging markets and placing capital into real estate, I think Colombia is attractive, specifically Medellin. I think the tourism part of the economy will remain strong. So things like hotel, hospitality, I know a lot of guys and girls that invest in short-term rentals. That seems to be a trend that I'm hearing for people that invest in real estate there, who invest in short-term rental type projects in desirable parts of the city of Medellin. So more of a comment on Medellin more than the country as a whole, but I see it as a very healthy environment for investment and a lot of demand from people who want to go there.
Yeah, Medellin's become, you know, being in the industry that I'm in, I get a lot of things that end up in my inbox, I guess, or just like shows up in my various social media about offshore retiring. And Medellin's like become very popular for that. It's got a huge expat population that's growing. And so it's become kind of a popular place for people who want to retire outside their home country. To go there because it's got a really great climate and excellent healthcare. It's got some of the best hospitals in Latin America, and it's also pretty affordable. So yeah, that's my understanding of Medellin as well. But that's not new. That's been going that way for a number of years at this point. All right, Josh, here's another question for you. Interesting one. Is there any interaction/cooperation issues with the Colombian drug cartel?
Not with us specifically at Legacy Group and Green Coffee Company. So we haven't had issues on our farms or in the region where we operate in Salgar. We have, you know, great security in place, of course, and very strong surveillance system, but no interactions with drug cartels, or cooperation with them. You know, things have been fortunately quiet in the region that we're in.
Okay. The next one was just a, Josh, just a sort of a comment thanking us, said it was good information. So I'll just pass that on. All right. So this one is a follow up, although it looks like they've left the, thing, but they've left the webinar. But, when we have an LLC here, can we invest in other countries? That was also my question. So, again, as I mentioned before, the short answer to that is possibly, and it depends upon the country that you want to invest in. Like some countries will require you to set up an entity in that specific country, like maybe a bank trust or some kind of corporate entity, like the equivalent of an LLC in that country to then invest in that country, as opposed to setting up an LLC. But from an entrust standpoint, like in either case, you can invest your IRA into an LLC here that invests in other countries, or you can invest your entrust IRA into an entity in that other country and invest in that country. Like we can hold either type of investment. Let's see. So here's again, like there's some more question about, or I guess it's more of a statement that the new president and reform agenda and believes that there will be more government control. I feel like you probably already answered that. I don't know if there's anything you want to expand on that. If not, I'll just move on.
No, I think we covered that topic pretty well.
Is there still an opportunity for individual investors in Green Coffee Company? I'm assuming the answer to that is yes, but go ahead and if you want to expand on that.
Yes, absolutely. So some of the slides that I shared today were from our Series C investor presentation. They were extracted from that, but we absolutely have investment opportunities available for individual investors. We specifically work with individual investors, whether that's in non-qualified or qualified accounts. So Series C equity funding round is open. We launched the $25 million raise in September on the equity side. We have just under $4 million remaining as of the time of this recording, mid-March. Minimum investments $100,000, open to accredited investors only. And while we're on the topic, I see another question here on holding period and liquidity. So
I was going to read that next. What is the liquidity like for this investment? How long will money be tied up, and what is the end game?
Sure. So, yeah, while we're on that, so it's inherently illiquid, as are most private equity securities, but we are targeting an exit in 2026. So the forecast would be to scale the business in its private form, build out the different verticals, roasted coffee, byproducts, and grow top-line revenue from just over $10 million in 2022 to north of $250 million by 2026. And we're expecting to either sell or, more preferably, conduct a U.S.-based IPO in 2026. So for anyone looking to invest, you know, I would look at this with a minimal three-year time horizon on the investment.
Okay. That looks like that was the last question. Josh, appreciate your time and joining us. And again, for anybody who wants to reach out to me, there's my contact information on the screen. Anybody who wants to contact Josh, there's his contact information. And please join us again next month for our webinar about ways to potentially avoid tax hits since it's now tax time. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.